Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB digital radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com.
So I'm pleased to say joining us this morning is the City UK CEO, Miles Selleck, who joins us now. Miles, great to have you on. What are the City UK then, good morning, calling on for the city from the new Prime Minister and Chancellor?
So from our perspective and from the perspective of the companies we represent and reflecting the conversations that we've had with international counterparts and other potential investors in the UK, what people are looking for is stability. They're looking for predictability. I think the UK has been seen from a political perspective as just a little bit too exciting, certainly since 2016 and the Brexit vote and the sort of consequences that have flowed from that, and arguably from 2014 and the Scottish independence referendum. So I think there will be a strong sense of welcome for being able to know the direction of travel on regulation, what that looks like now that the UK is out of the European Union, what's the vision for financial and related professional services, something Rishi Sunak set out quite compellingly in his Mansion House speech last year. How will that be built on? And what are we going to see as we move forward also in terms of potential new deals with other markets? Obviously, there's been talk of FTAs with India, with the US, we've got CPTPP. What does all that mean for financial and professional services? And how do regulation, tax, you know, the broader picture all fit together?
Are they listening, Miles? Is Rishi Sunak, is his team actually listening? Are they actually going to implement some of the demands, some of the suggestions that you and the team have been putting forward for months, for years?
So what I'd say is that one of the things that I think gives us cause for optimism is that Rishi Sunak and his team have been listening for some time, certainly when they were in Treasury. And Rishi and John Glenn, who did a terrific job when he was City Minister and has now obviously been promoted to Chief Secretary, spent about 2 years in a really solid, comprehensive exercise of consulting with industry. And that sort of led to things such as the Hill Review on listings, the Khalifa Review on fintech, the financial regulatory framework. And that's now going to be delivered in large part through the Financial Services and Markets Bill that's making its way through Parliament at the moment. And if we had one sort of major issue, one major priority that we would point to in terms of what government can deliver that I think would make a big step forward, it would be the delivery of the Financial Services and Markets Bill. There's a huge amount of change in there. It's going to be a lot to digest for regulators. It's going to be a lot to digest for companies. But it's something that has been consulted on for some time. And we'll see what happens as we move forward in terms of the UK remaining a competitive and attractive place to do business.
Okay. The issue, though, of course, is that government policy, government itself, has basically stalled for months. I mean, interesting that you mentioned John Glenn, Chief Secretary to the Treasury, who then left in July and then now is back as a minister. I mean, there was quite a bit of turmoil in the intervening weeks. But anyway, that aside, during the Liz Truss era, business leaders started to voice basically what for them seems to be an uncomfortable truth, which is that Brexit has harmed business. Even The Telegraph put out an editorial talking about how Project Fear was true, was a reality. 6 years on from Brexit, what does the financial sector in London have to show for leaving the EU?
So I think a couple of things there. So one, absolutely agree, there's been a lot of policy turmoil. Equally, as I would say, the financial services, what's been reassuring from the point of view of financial services, the Financial Services and Markets Bill appears to be making its way forward without any major changes. And as I say, that's something that we in industry would like to see continued. From the point of view of the financial and professional services ecosystem here in the UK, and I can't speak on behalf of other parts of the economy where clearly there is an has been an ongoing Brexit impact. We worked extremely closely with regulators in the UK and in the EU pretty early on to make sure that the impact of Brexit was as limited as possible and there was as minimum amount of disruption. The EY Brexit tracker, probably the best analysis of the shifting jobs, shows that although there were real concerns early on that there were going to be a fast shift of jobs, that hasn't been the case. About 7,500, somewhere between 7,500 and 8,000 jobs in financial services in the UK have left as a result of Brexit, from what we can tell. That's out of a total of 1.1 million. And in terms of the shift that we're seeing from exports, and obviously The UK is one of the world's two leading international financial centres. The US has now become our largest single market for financial services exports. It's overhauled the EU. I think that's not a surprise. But also, if you look at the most recent trade stats, and these come from Suffolk University's Trade Observatory and are based on ONS stats, there's been a surge in exports to markets outside the EU, so an increase of more than 20%, an overall increase of more than 11%. And the US, Switzerland, Hong Kong are the biggest beneficiaries of that, you know, and those are more than 20% for the US, more than 60% for Hong Kong.
Right. I mean, most of what you just explained and outlined for us very comprehensively and very clearly is mitigation effects of the worst damaging effects of Brexit. And apparently there's been a pretty good job in mitigating some of those worst effects. Trade, we know overall, is still significantly down if you add in our lost trade to Europe. So it seems that there are, just to be clear, no clear Brexit benefits, just to be clear.
So the first thing I'd say is that and this is why we've always been slightly suspicious of this sort of demand to tear up European regulation that occasionally comes up from time to time in certain quarters. What that ignores is that the rules that we inherited from the EU are very largely British rules. The UK industry, UK regulators, UK government did extremely well at designing and building the architecture of European regulation. And, you know, that was in the nature of the way that the EU operates. Typically, large member states with a particular interest or expertise in a part of the economy tend to take the informal lead on that. So on agriculture, French, on advanced manufacturing, tends to be the Germans. On financial services, it was the UK. So with very few exceptions, the rules that we've onboarded are very much made in Britain. Now, the challenge will be how we move forward. So the divergence won't particularly be on the back book of EU regulation. The divergence will be in terms of how we move forward on things such as fintech or green and sustainable finance or other areas that are going to be the way in which financial services as an ecosystem develops in the years ahead. And that's going to be ultimately, that is going to be something of a balancing act between maintaining the best possible access for the UK to the EU and vice versa, we shouldn't forget that, but also being able to gain the benefits of the big growth markets in Asia and the continued enormous financial services operations in the US.
Look, that does sound like basically a plea against what the government has repeatedly said, which is a kind of a bonfire of EU regulation. If, you know, again, that word has been used in just the last few weeks. But look, away from that then, in your view, what does move the dial on something that actually a lot of people do seem to agree on is the need for economic growth in the UK. How can that be driven out of the City of London?
Yeah, and I would just say, just on your point about a bonfire regulation, that's not something the mainstream of the industry has ever supported. You know, ultimately, good, high-quality standards.
But that is what but that is the direction of travel, it would seem, from government.
So, I mean, I'm not sure I'd agree with that. I think that what we're looking at now seems to be much more a sort of steady as she goes approach. But we will see, you know, what unfolds over the weeks ahead. And the government, certainly the conversations we've had, has absolutely recognised the importance of high standards in regulation as a competitive advantage. What we need to avoid, however, is the kind of classic approach that's been taken too often in the past of gold plating or a lack of efficiency in execution of those rules. And that's something that the FCA and the PRA are very aware of our views on. It's something, in fairness, that I think culturally will require a shift. And that's something that I think many of the people in those institutions recognise. In terms of your question regarding what we can do, I mean, if you look at the big growth opportunities for any major developed economy around technology, around green and sustainable technology and industries, around the need to level up and build economic activity outside capitals or major cities, that's something this industry does extremely well. And one of the things we want to see more of in regulation and supervision is a recognition of the economic benefits and the social benefits that can come from investment and the sort of investment that exists in our industry. I mean, the real sort of interesting thing here about what Liz Truss sought to do was the diagnosis wasn't wrong. There's absolutely a need for more growth. And you would see that, I would argue, reflected in the conversations that people have with Labour and with this administration, this Conservative administration that succeeded it. The question is how you move forward on that, and we have a positive role to play in it.
Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB Digital Radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com.